Today is Monday, September 25th, 2006. My name is Sandy Fahler, and I'm an interviewer with the University of Wisconsin-Madison Oral History Project. Today, I am interviewing Barbara Arnold, Senior Student Services Coordinator with the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Library and Information Studies in the College of Letters and Science. Hello, Barbara.
Hello, Sandy. Thanks for asking me to participate in the Oral History Project.
Well, I'm very glad we could set this up. We're going to start with the beginning of your life. If you would talk about where and when you were born, describe your childhood, early schooling, talk about any family members, teachers, or others who encouraged you in your studies.
Okay. Well, I was born in New York Hospital in New York City. My father was on the staff of the hospital, and we lived in an apartment across the street from the hospital until I was about 4 years old. My maiden name was Cornell. My father went to Cornell University, and my grandfather, Cornell, was also a doctor. But they weren't direct descendants of Ezra, so my father had to pay tuition. He went to medical school after he came back from being in the Air Force during World War II. And we lived in 1403, right across from the hospital, until I was about 4.5 years old. Then we moved to just above the Bronx line, north of Manhattan, in a town called Pelham Manor, which was the town that my father grew up in Westchester County. Having read Tim Wise's book, I know that my story is a story of white privilege. I was very fortunate to know both sets of grandparents. My grandfather, Cornell, was a general surgeon, as my father was. My grandmother had been a nurse until she had 6 boys. Hmm. And then she was busy volunteer woman and community service coordinator and things like that as a volunteer running a big household.
In New York City?
In Pelham.
In Pelham, that's right.
In Pelham,
mm-hmm.
Westchester County.
Mm-hmm.
My mother's maiden name was Lawless, and she grew up out on Long Island in Forest Hills. And my grandfather, Lawless, had been a city comptroller for the city of New York.
Mm-hmm.
So he did not lose his job during the Depression. He was fully employed. And my grandmother, Lawless, was a school teacher for Brooklyn Public Schools. Math and social studies, I believe. I'm not sure what they called it back then, but that's... She emigrated from Ireland with her family when she was just a small child. And shortly after her parents arrived in the Boston area, they died of either rheumatic or scarlet fever or something like that, one of the immigrant fever diseases.
Mm.
So she was raised by an aunt and went to Columbia for teacher college and was a school teacher until she retired.
Mm-hmm.
When we were growing up, we lived in 2 different houses in the town of Pelham, which is a cluster of towns that is called the Pelhams, which were founded by Huguenots back in the pre-revolutionary era. We lived first on Country Club Lane and then on the Boston Post Road. And I'm the oldest of 6 children, although I did have an older brother who was killed in an automobile accident when I was just, I think he was 3 years old and I was just 1.5 years.
Oh my.
And that did have a profound effect on my family. My father was the oldest of 6. And funny, I'm married to an oldest of 4. We belonged to the Pelham Country Club, and I was fortunate to be able to go to summer camp and I was a babysitter from the get-go.
I'll bet.
I specialized in infants, so I could charge 25 cents extra an hour.
Oh, I thought you meant in your own family you were.
Well, I got started with my own family. But mm-hmm. And I did switch. I went to Pelham Prospect Hill Elementary School, had a wonderful elementary school librarian who let me volunteer in the library. And then when I graduated from Prospect Hill in sixth grade, my sixth grade teacher and I had not gotten along very well. So my parents decided that I was not being oriented towards academic development effectively. So I went to Ursuline Academy for 2 years, and then went to Maria Regina Regents High School, which was a diocesan school in near White Plains, mm-hmm. which was quite a commute on the bus in the mornings. But the Sisters of the Resurrection were wonderful teachers, and they got me back on track in terms of graduating from high school and going to college. But because I had to commute so far on the bus, I transferred back to Pelham High for my junior and senior year so that I could get some extracurricular activities in. And I took a job at the Pelham High School Library with Mrs. Riedinger. She was the school media specialist that managed the library for Pelham High. And she had been a Columbia Library School graduate. So we talked quite a bit about that, and she established a student library association for Westchester County and encouraged me to join, which I did, and I did serve as president my senior year. So I had WSLA, WLA, and already niched into my future. Mm-hmm.
Just back up a little. Your mm-hmm. mother was college educated?
My mother was a graduate of Cornell University. That's where my mother and father had met. She mm-hmm. had an archaeology background, which she didn't pursue because when my father came back from the war, they got married and started having a family right away. Mm-hmm. When I was 12, when we were doing middle school, well, what are you going to do when you grow up? I decided that I didn't want to be a school teacher like my grandmother was. She was somewhat autocratic. Mm-hmm. But that I did really enjoy libraries and English, and I actually was able to sort of major in English in high school because of switching schools. I was able to avoid home economics. And I took lots of extra English classes, like Shakespeare, world literature, and language root class, as well as 4 years of art.
Now this was the 60s, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I graduated from Pelham High School in June of 68 and came to Wisconsin to go to Marquette University that fall.
And did you know at that time that you wanted to be a librarian?
I had decided that I wanted to be a librarian because I didn't want to be a school teacher, and a friend of my grandmother's was a librarian at the United Nations.
Oh.
And I thought, how cool would that be? So I majored in English in high school, figured I'd go and get a bachelor's degree in English or history, and then go to library school. So when I was looking for colleges, mm-hmm. I talked to a number of people. I was not a grade A student. I was a solid B student. Mm-hmm. And competition to get into any of the peer institutions and the really high-level institutions coming out of Westchester County was mm-hmm. pretty impossible. So I looked at St. Mary's at Notre Dame and UW-Madison and Marquette University. And the reason that we looked at Marquette was kind of a funny story. For my 16th birthday, my father was coming out to Chicago for an American College of Surgeons meeting. And that was going to be my college tour trip. Mm-hmm. So we went to Chicago and rented a car and went over to St. Mary's and then drove up to Madison to look at the UW campus. And my father said, well, while you're there, you have an uncle, Bob, that lives in New Berlin outside Milwaukee, so you'd have family close by. Marquette's a Jesuit school, so it's got to be good in English. And it has a medical school, so it's got to be a good school.
Okay.
So we went up and had a tour of Marquette, and I loved the fact that it was in the middle of the city, and yet it was an overpowering city like Chicago. And they offered me an early admission. Hmm. And it was much cheaper to go to Marquette than any of the schools on the East Coast.
Really?
So it was quite a bargain, and I knew in November that I could go to Marquette if I accepted. Hmm. So I decided to accept my admission and went back and worked on Cape Cod over the summer, and then my mother put me on a plane and sent me off to college. And I was the oldest, and my siblings were very pleased with me for going away because it made it much easier for them to go away when the time came. And when I arrived in Milwaukee, I stayed in a dorm. I had a single room because I was finally going to have my own space and be on my own without having all my brothers and sisters to deal with or answer to or whatever. And it was funny because across the hall was a woman from New Jersey, and the woman next to her was from Queens. They probably did that deliberately, I guess. But I got to know a number of nursing students who lived around me in O'Donnell Hall up on 18th Street. And the chancellor had a convocation for the incoming students, and the director of the library was one of the people that spoke to welcome the students. And I talked to Jim O'Reilly, telling him that I was planning to go to library school when I finished my program, mm-hmm. and that I would like to have a job in the library while I was enrolled in school. And he said, well, by all means, come on over and we'll fill out an application. And I worked with Mrs. Couch in the reserves desk and worked at the security desk checking people's IDs. Mm-hmm. Got some good dates that way.
I'll bet.
Yeah. Yeah. Worked the entire time I was an undergrad at the Memorial Library. And actually, they were building the new edition, which is now the old edition, mm-hmm. on the Marquette Memorial Library. And one of the projects that I did before I graduated was I integrated the engineering house collection, which had not been managed by a professional librarian, into the catalog at Memorial. Mm-hmm. Every permutation on an error set in the cataloging cards that you could imagine. Unbelievable. Very good training.
I'll bet.
but a problem, because I knew that cataloging wasn't a science. So when I took cataloging from Val Mae Fenster, it was difficult. I took one course at UW-Milwaukee. Hank Winterfelt was the instructor for the reference class. He was a school media specialist in the Kenosha School District. Before he moved to UW Oshkosh to be head of the libraries, mm-hmm. there. So I had moved from the dorms with the nursing students that had been friends to an apartment up by St. Joe's where they did their nursing practice, and commuted on the bus down to campus to work and to finish coursework. And I was, one of the other things that I did right away when I arrived at Marquette was to join the sailing club. Mm. And there were 8 couples that joined the sailing club that year and the next year. And all of them got married.
So you joined as a couple?
Well, we've all met in the sailing club and became couples.
Oh, how interesting.
And everybody is still a couple except for Susie Source, who married Marty Reek. She's a school media specialist in the Milwaukee Public Schools. And Marty had the temerity to have a heart attack a couple years ago. So she's the only one that isn't still a couple. We sailed all kinds of boats out at the yacht club down on Lake Michigan shore. Mm-hmm. We had FJs just like the small ones here, and a 5.5-meter boat and 210. And I got checked out in the small boat, and then checked out my husband. Got him checked out in the small boats, but then he was an engineering student. Mm-hmm. And was a senior at the time. I was a freshman. He'd had some trouble with thermodynamics and was going to be spending an extra year or two. He actually graduated in, I started in the fall of 68, and he graduated in December of 69. So he quickly adapted to the larger boats, and was checked out in the 5.5-meter and 210s. So we had wonderful time sailing, competing with other schools in regattas. Mm. In the wintertime, we'd go up to Indian Head to ski as a club, and sometimes the Hoofers would join us. So that was a great experience. Marquette was a really good, solid training. And I decided on Marquette rather than Madison because I was sure that I would never graduate from Madison. Mm-hmm. Because I would never settle on a major. Because there are so many wonderful courses to take, I thought no graduate school would be better.
So you then, when you graduated from Marquette, you also knew right then that you would go right on to graduate school?
That was my plan.
Uh-huh.
My mother had instilled in my bones from the beginning that I really should have a career so that I could stand on my own two feet before I were to get married. Partially, I think, because she didn't ever have a career of her own. Mm-hmm. Other than raising a huge family and being a wonderful volunteer and community activist and good wife to a busy doctor. Mm-hmm. So I had it in my head that I would get my degree before I were to settle down or get married. Even I had planned to go to graduate school right after my bachelor's degree anyway.
And was UW-Madison your only choice? Or had, did you
No,
consider
I looked
others?
At Michigan and I looked at Urbana-Champaign.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I graduated from Marquette, which was in 72, Steve and I had been going together for 4.5 years, and we hadn't met anyone else. So it looked pretty dependable that we were going to be getting married. Mm-hmm. He was drafted, but found out that his asthma, which he had had as a child, would allow him to get a deferral.
Mm-hmm.
So we went through that whole process. And he was working for his father's engineering firm in Rockford, Illinois. And that was fine for a bit, but then they started getting on each other's nerves. And by the third time he was fired, he decided it would be a good idea to find another job. And he was hired by John A. Strand Associates, which is a municipal consulting engineering firm here in Madison. Their old office was on University Avenue at 1800 University Avenue, mm-hmm. Which has an apartment building that a number of librarians had lived in.
Hmm.
I think Bunny Gibson had lived there at one point, and Ellen Christensen. And the office was down in the basement, and the professional employment market back in the middle 70s was very, very, very difficult because everybody was switching over to large automation systems, mm-hmm. figuring that they weren't going to need any personnel, but investing great sums of money in these huge computer networks and systems. So I figured it would be a good idea to get to know as many people as possible if I was going to be living in the Madison area, mm-hmm. so that when I graduated, I would be in the pipeline for potential employment opportunities. And I had taken the reference class at Milwaukee, which they accepted here. Mm-hmm. So I tested out of Richard Walker's introductory reference class. Mm-hmm. It was a 30-credit program. So I started in January of 1973 and graduated in December 73. Mm-hmm. And then Steve and I were married at St. Paul's January 19th, 1974. Mm-hmm. and we're still married.
That's great. Now, did you know when you entered library school what particular area of librarianship you wanted to pursue?
Well, I figured that I would straddle the fence between academic and public, thinking that that would be the most logical place that I'd probably find something, some employment. And I ended up working in for the DNR. But I also knew that I used library administration as another key element, and actually took an independent study with the former director of Memorial Library, and I argued participatory management with Lou Kaplan. I actually got a B from him. Not that he agreed with my philosophy, but...
Talk about some other experiences of library school, since the library school is celebrating its centennial.
Mm-hmm.
And you were here 30 years ago?
Yeah, 1930. I was here from January through December 1973.
Right, okay. Well, talk about your experience.
My first job was working for the humanities bibliographer at Memorial. I'd found an efficiency apartment on Fitch Court, which was between the university bookstore and the Catholic Center.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side of the extension building behind the Peterson building.
Mm-hmm.
So I could fall out of bed for an 8 o'clock class without any problem at all. And had people over to study cataloging before our exams. Very conveniently located close to campus.
Is this where the library school was?
Mm-hmm.
Where it is today.
Right. Yeah, the library school came to 600 North Park Street in 1971. The roof was still leaking, so there were still white buckets, plastic buckets in the commons, with plastic tubing running from the tiles to the buckets in the floor. But it's such a wonderful location. And having all the classes as on this floor or as close to this building was really a great opportunity. Charles Bungie was the director. Margaret Monroe was on the faculty. My advisor was Muriel Fuller. And she was a wonderful ambassador of continuing education and lifelong learning. And I knew that that was a strong interest of mine. I worked on a student organization and ran the coffee and donut contingent for the school. We would have Greeby's Bakery deliver donuts every Tuesday, and then we sold coffee in the commons. And I remember when we were cleaning out the student organization office to make room for a special project and some new doctoral students. We opened up the credenza in the commons, and I found my notebook with all of the sales notes and receipts and a can of coffee that had been there 15 years.
No donuts, though.
No, fortunately, no donuts. And I worked on a newsletter. I decided while I was in school that I would join the Special Libraries Association rather than the American Library Association because I liked the subject orientation of the SLA. Mm-hmm. And I liked the fact that it was a smaller organization. I thought that I'd be able to do more quickly in a smaller group. And I've been very happy with that decision. I've been a member of the Special Libraries Association since then. When I graduated from library school, I went through the wedding ceremony here, having my family and Steve's family come in from all over the country, just about. And that way, friends from library school and friends from Marquette could come to this service, too. We had a great big party. It was great fun. We went up to Indian Head for a skiing honeymoon and both got sick, so uh-oh. It took a couple weeks to get over that. And then there weren't many things to apply for, so I volunteered at Middleton Public Library, integrating the children's card catalog with the main catalog in advance of their automation system project. And while I was doing that, Muriel Fuller got a contract to do a community analysis project for Waukesha Public Library. The library director there had been there since the dawn of time, and the library board wanted some advice on what they should be looking for in a new director. And that was a 6 months contract. I worked with her gathering, working with people at the Southeast Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission, talking to the staff, talking to people in the community, making recommendations for the future development of Waukesha, which was going to be one of the fastest growing sections in the state. As it turned out, it really has been. Mm-hmm. As that was finishing up and we were writing the report to turn over to the board, my predecessor, Phyllis Boyle, called and said, well, somebody from the Department of Natural Resources called and said they wanted a student to start a library collection for them. She said, I think they really need somebody with a little more library work experience. So up to this point, I've got high school library and academic library experience. And I had joined the Special Libraries Association. It was the Bureau of Air Pollution Control and Solid Waste Management in the Coca-Cola bottling building out on University Avenue mm-hmm. that was moving into a new facility, and they figured they had space. They wanted to have a reference collection. So I talked to the EPA Region 5 librarian, Lou Tilley, in Chicago, and spent a lot of time talking to Fran Wood in the engineering library on campus. And then reached out to some of the other state agency librarians at the Department of Administration, Marge Westergaard, who was a classmate and helped me get through cataloging. Joanne Savoy, who worked in another state, Marge switched over to Health and Social Services, and Joanne took the position of the Department of Administration. And Kathy Schneider was working at Wills, or at Reference and Loan. And I worked with Loretta Harmatuck and people in the Department of Justice Law Library.
So you were starting this this library pretty much from scratch.
From
there was
scratch,
nothing.
Right?
Oh, how interesting.
Mm-hmm. It was great fun.
Yeah.
It took about 6 months to figure out the vocabulary and to figure out where the resources would be that would most likely support the engineers that were working in both these bureaus. It was an interesting combination of air pollution and solid waste, which is not wastewater. And the people in that bureau went on to spin off a private company. That while I was working for them, some members of the conservation department within the DNR were starting an outreach, an information and referral center, basically, at the Steenbach Library that they were funding with a Conservation Foundation grant. And they asked if I wouldn't be interested, if I would be interested in applying and taking responsibility for that project. So I moved from the Coca-Cola bottling building over to the Steenbach Library, and my coworker from the Wills office at Memorial, Emily Wixon, took my And then I moved over to Steenbach to set up the Natural Resources and Environmental Reference Center, which was, I spent a great deal of time setting up a database, which was interesting, using a software program that the National Ag Library used called Famulus.
Now, were you an employee of the university at that time?
Yes, I was.
All right, so
I was
a university
a specialist.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. One of those old titles that mm-hmm. didn't mean much of anything. I worked 3/4 time, funded by the Gordon H. Barker Foundation, and it was to set up information and referral centers so that I could tell people where to look for natural resources, landscape architecture, outdoor education, conservation and environmental information. And at that time, there wasn't a union catalog, and there weren't microcomputers, and the materials were scattered from one end of the campus to the other, and from agriculture to trade and consumer protection across the city. So I set up a database of gray literature, because so much of the environmental materials were in that developmental stage. There weren't as many standard journals and textbooks, and it was a relatively new subject area. Conservation and environmental information. And I worked there for 3.5 years. And during that time, we worked on a new town's bibliography, we worked on a guide for undergraduates on environmental resources, and entered into a contract with the State Energy Department to do a bibliography for them. And during that time, the director of the Steenbach Library, David Euler, decided to retire and return to California. And Jan Kennedy was hired as the director of the Steenbach Library. She went to the National Ag Library as part of her job interview process and found a horrible mess, a backlog, and mismanagement, and opened her mouth, and they hired her to go and work there for, I think she was there for almost a year. And since I was sort of the odd person out and didn't have a regular appointment at Steenbach, I was the person that went over to the Middleton Health Sciences Library to fill in while Daisy Wu took over as acting director at Steenbach.
I didn't know that. Okay.
And I think we ran both ourselves ragged. I got mononucleosis from the experience and had to take some time off. And
Jan Kennedy was not as interested in trying to find alternative funding or to continue the clearinghouse function. She had other things that she wanted to work on. So I applied for a conference coordinator position with the Sea Grant College program and took that. I was a marine resources agent for the Sea Grant College and got to do some really wonderful things that the next 2.5 years until President Reagan was elected and he cut the marine resources outreach budgets for the Sea Grant colleges. And the office that I had was in was closed.
Now I have to ask you a question. When you talked about high school and Marquette, you talked about English and history and how much you enjoyed the classes you took.
Mm-hmm.
And now you are right in the middle of science in your career that
mm-hmm.
you're talking
mm-hmm.
about. Were you surprised at the time?
I had always had an interest in the environment. My family was always encouraged us to be engaged in outdoor recreation and I guess conservation, even though we weren't really cognizant of that at that point. My sister worked for a natural history museum, and I loved to sail, and I loved to walk the beach and collect shells and things. So my affinity to the outdoors and to conservation was already there.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband's background is civil engineering. So for the engineering things, I could pick his brain.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised at how quickly I was able to step in to an entirely new disciplinary area. Mm-hmm. And I think it took about 6 months to pick up the vocabulary, and thank goodness for the librarian at the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, Region 5 Library in Chicago. Lou Tilley was a godsend. And the members of the Natural Resources Division of the Special Libraries Association were also a wonderful network and group of colleagues that could help.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I thought we had to get that on tape because mm-hmm. that was quite a switch from
yes,
earlier
high school,
life.
Yes, high school librarianship and then academic librarianship in reserves and in cataloging and in moving into a new edition. When I worked first for the humanities bibliographer, Lloyd Griffith,
mm-hmm.
for a short time, and then Nancy Marshall was setting up the Wills office in the Memorial Library. And because I had had experience working with different collections, integrating different collections, my job for the Wills office was searching all of the incorrect citations on the interlibrary loan requests. So rather than running from library to library to pick up things and make copies, I worked on the really hard questions in the bowels of Memorial and in the periodical room, trying to figure out what the person was really trying to look for. And using the acoustic coupler and the Minitex Mull's Union List of Serials, it was interesting to see that kind of an interlibrary system organization develop, and was a great place to work. Nancy was a great boss, and Emily Wixon was my co-worker, and she was going to go into music librarianship because she had a strong music background. But when she got involved in the Bureau of Air Pollution Control and Solid Waste Management and then moved with them into another building, a Pi R Square building, which merged her collection with another collection, which eventually became the Department of Natural Resources Library, she also got excited about working in the sciences. And when a reference position opened at Steenbach, she moved to Steenbach from DNR, and a classmate of mine from library school, Mary Jane Kays, had graduated. She had had some aquaculture lab work experience. She took the job at DNR. and then moved with the men from the Bureau when they spun off RMT, Residuals Management Technologies, and worked for them for a number of years. And RMT is still in existence. Mm-hmm. The DNR library is now going out of existence.
Oh. It's too bad. It was quite a training ground for some excellent people.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
All right, so President Reagan
cut back the extension outreach budgets. The man that I worked with, Greg Hedden, was getting ready to retire. So we closed that office. And I worked for a period of time as an ad hoc administrative aide for Madison Public Library while they were searching for a successor for Bernie Schwab. And I did a part-time consultation project for Strand Associate, my husband's engineering firm, mm-hmm. made recommendations for the organization of the materials that they have in their collections now. And did a short-term project for the Institute for Environmental Studies. And then Darlene Weingand was looking for a part-time program coordinator in Library and Information Science Extension. And that was like, well, sure, why not? That's a good fit. I've been active in WLA, and I've been active in the SLIS Alumni Association since I was a student. Certainly working with the pre-professional coursework for public library certification would be fun. I was able to do a summer reading program themed conference on marine and Great Lakes resources, sand dune shipping and salmonids, which pulled public librarians and school librarians together from a number of places along the Lake Michigan and Lake Superior shoreline. And we met at up in Sister Bay at the Clearing Conference Center. Had a wonderful experience there. And I continued my participation in the Natural Resources Division of the Special Libraries Association because it was a natural extension of the Sea Grant mission, and they expanded to include a more wide definition of environmental resources, and was an editor of the newsletter for the division for them for a couple of years with Pat Parsons, who was the DNR librarian after Mary Jane Case had gone to work with RMT and the department library had actually been established. So I worked for Darlene half-time, and we set up a certificate program that in library management and library automation, and I took the certificate in library administration, which had personnel management. I think you might have taught one of the courses.
Could be.
For the continuing education certificate.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was working for Darlene, we wrote a Library Services and Construction Act grant to develop something related to another module or program for the public library certification. And the director of the library school, Jane Robbins, was working on a summer reading research project, which she received some LSCA money for. So I worked with the director of the School of Library and Information Studies, Jane Robbins, and I worked for Library and Information Science Extension. When Phyllis Boyle announced that she was going to retire, I thought, well, her position pulls together all of the things that I've been doing would allow me to continue to build, to maintain my interest in special librarianship, because so many of the faculty have public and academic backgrounds. I'd been active with the Wisconsin Library Association and the Special Libraries Association, and I've been through every kind of job interview you could imagine in the city of Madison, and I've been successful in finding soft-funded alternative applications to a library degree at a time when the market was very, very tight. So I applied and went through the interview process. I was trying to remember whether we did the same formal interview where you have to meet with so many different people and you have to do a public presentation. I don't believe I had to do a public presentation, but I do remember that I met with a number of the faculty, and of course I had been working with Darlene. I don't know whether I met with a committee of students, but there was an interview process where there were a number of people that conducted the interview. And I started as admissions and placement counselor in June of 1985. And I've been working in that, in this position ever since then.
Okay. Talk about your responsibilities in this position.
I've just this past spring changed my title from admissions and placement. I had changed it from counselor to advisor because I didn't like the counseling psychology connotations. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not trained as a social worker or a psychologist, so I preferred more of the advisor title. And as we were going through the retitling, that was in the late 80s, early 90s when we went through all those title reassignments, mm-hmm. for the academic staff. I had changed it to admissions and placement advisor. So I'm responsible for talking to people who want to come and take classes in the master's program and the doctoral program. We do have a postmaster's specialist certificate, so I can advise people on that. I talk to a lot of people who are returning adults or who've been out working in other fields and want to become a librarian, and advise them while they're taking classes as non-degree university special students. And as things have developed through the school over the years, I've taken responsibility for the colloquium committee, for graduation ceremony, for new student orientation. I'm the diversity enhancement advisor and the school contact for students with special needs. And so...
What do you do as the diversity enhancement?
I work with the campus diversity committees.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. I've taken training for campus community and for enhancing the climate on campus.
Mm-hmm.
Worked with our own school diversity committee when everyone was reading the same book and then having book discussions. And I've taken some interpersonal communication skills training that was available from the campus office. My husband says what I do is I take English and history majors and make them into productive members of society. But I thoroughly enjoy recruiting students and talking to people about careers in the field and the wide variety, breadth and depth of job content and occupation in the field. I've got a friend who's retired from the engineering library who before she worked in the technical reports office there, worked for American Players Theater, setting up a reference collection for them. Before that, she worked at the National Bureau of Standards in Washington, Denver Public Library, UW Parkside, University of Minnesota. So she ran the gamut throughout her lifetime of almost every kind of library, type of library, and different types of job assignments in each of them.
Now, have you seen changes in the applicant pool, in the students that do end up coming to library school over the years that you've been in that position?
We have more male applicants since when I first started working on processing the admissions. I've specifically worked more recently in reaching out to people with at career fairs that have science and math backgrounds. We've had a lot of inquiry from people who have a law degree and want to add a library science degree so that they can stay in the legal field but not have to be a practicing attorney.
Mm-hmm.
I think the average age of the students has gone down. It used to be about 35, and now it's closer to 32 years old. So that we're getting more students coming to the field directly from their undergraduate programs, partially because of their employment in libraries, either at high school or while they were in undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also because of the awareness of information technology. I think that inspires people to think of the field more readily than they had in the past.
And how is the job market right now?
It's always competitive in the Madison area. The class of 2005 was a little bit harder to get a hold of than the class of 2004. I do the salary and placement statistics for the school and report them to Library Journal each year.
Mm-hmm.
In 2004, everybody who was looking for a job in a library got one. And most people found them within 6 to 9 months of their graduation. For the people that I was able to find, which was probably 75% of the class of 2005, those people that were looking for library employment found something either before they graduated or within 4 months of graduation. And the students that graduate from this school go on to work in public and academic libraries in reference departments or in adult or youth services for the most part. Then we have a steady but small number of people that go into school library media centers. Another group now that we have a regular archives program go into archival work.
Mm-hmm.
And then a small group of people that do a whole variety of things. Some work for library vendors in information systems. Some apply their library degree at the UW Foundation, for example, working as researchers for the UW Foundation. Others that work for not-for-profits and government information agencies like mm-hmm. FEMA.
And you said you also work with people coming into the PhD program.
Mm-hmm.
Now
I'm the secretary for the doctoral, the PhD committee.
Okay. And what is the market like for those people?
Very much in favor of the applicant, because the schools of library and information studies have expanded to include information science, and many faculty members have reached the retirement age. Like the graying of our profession has also affected the
sure.
library science faculties.
Mm-hmm.
There had been some library school closures back in 1985 when microcomputers were really coming into their own, and the faculties either needed to adapt to the new technology or retire. Mm-hmm. That was when the University of Minnesota closed their school. So we've had Minnesotans here ever since.
Sure.
And Jim Kirkalis was really good at adapting to the new computer technology. He and Richard Walker sort of jumped right in and added that whole new tool set to the curriculum and to the courses that were offered here. Certainly the microcomputer and internet technology has had a significant effect on I think the visibility of our profession. Even though the stereotype that everybody gets to sit behind the desk and read books all day and shush people still is alive and well, I think more people are recognizing that information literacy and computer technology is really critical to being successful. And so we attract a broader mix of undergraduate discipline areas.
What do applicants need to do to apply to libraries, to the School of Library and Information Studies? What's required?
Well, they have to have maintained a 3.0 grade point average in their last 60 hours of work as an undergraduate, or be able to demonstrate coursework after their undergraduate program that would demonstrate their admissibility. They need two letters of academic reference and a third letter that could be academic or professional. And then we have some set essays that we ask them to complete. One that's a work history, a self-assessment, and a career goal statement, which we use to see what their writing ability is and to have a broad mix of undergraduate discipline areas and career goals to distribute the students across the faculty. Mm-hmm. And to have a heterogeneous enough group that we're generating people that can work in a variety of subject fields.
And then there's a committee that reviews these applications and
We have a student records manager, Diana Bob, who receives all of the application materials and feeds the information into a file management system that can generate an index of admissibility.
Mm-hmm. That helps.
Yes, and I go through all of the applications and prepare the indexes of admissibility and look for people who have strong academic backgrounds, who have strong people skills, who have potential for leadership, who obviously have done some reflecting and thinking about the field and have a commitment to library and information studies,
mm-hmm.
Have good language skills, previous library work experience. All of those elements are taken into consideration, mm-hmm. in the admissibility index. And the letters of recommendation are taken into consideration too.
Mm-hmm.
Then we admit people in batches based, mm-hmm. on when the applications are completed,
mm-hmm.
And looking for a mix of undergraduate discipline areas so that not everybody is an English and history major. We still get most applications from English and history majors, so it makes it somewhat competitive for people with my background. and we maintain a mix so that there's a pretty much equal distribution for advising across the faculty.
Okay, it's very interesting. Do you consider yourself a mentor then of these students?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
My advising role is to serve as an interceder between students and faculty, between students and students, to assist students that have special needs and need referral to different services on campus, like the Health Center and the Writing Lab and the Counseling Center, the McBurney Center for Disability Resources. I have worked closely with the Special Libraries Association student group to keep them on track so that they get their annual stipend from the organization.
Mm-hmm.
Have helped both the ALA student group and the SLA student group in establishing a mentor program, connecting students with professionals in the Madison area, and sometimes by email in the broader national arena.
Mm-hmm.
I work with the faculty to coordinate the placements for practicum assignments, so we're not always badgering our area supervisors with multiple requests for placements, and help students in getting student employment while they're enrolled in school, and then work with students and alumni and other people who want to come to the Madison area to find employment in Madison and Wisconsin in the upper Midwest. I have an email subscription jobs list, and I will critique people's employment application packages with a cover letter and their resumes.
Mm-hmm.
Try to have at least 2 career advising and placement events, one each semester during the main school year, and then try to schedule other things as students voice an interest, and we can schedule roundtable career discussions or career fairs. So yes, mentoring is a key element.
Right. What are the most interesting aspects of your position? What are the most challenging? Most enjoyable and most challenging?
The most interesting and challenging is getting through all of the applications. But it's delightful to read so many of the application materials and the letters of recommendation. The stories that people have to share are wonderful. The most difficult challenge is working with students who are very bright but have mental health issues.
Mm.
I think in the last, probably the last decade, there's been more students with special needs and with depression than we were maybe aware of or as cognizant of earlier. We do try to not lose people during the year and try to make effective referrals to the Student Counseling Center and the Student Health Center. But that can sometimes be a problem.
Mm-hmm. Would you talk about the culture of the School of Library and Information Studies? Is it collaborative? Could you give some examples of the culture?
Okay. I think the school is a wonderful example of an effective academic department where the faculty have a variety of backgrounds and interests, but are united in the mission and vision of the school. I think that we've been successful in our accreditation processes over the years because the directors of the school have enabled the faculty to come to a consensus in terms of the mission and vision of the school and the goals and objectives of the master's program. We have a faculty retreat every year where we revisit those, and so there is a strategic planning function that underpins the school's curriculum, which I think is reflected in the fact that we say that we graduate librarians to work as master's librarians, and the people that graduate from this school do that,
mm-hmm.
for the most part. Faculty meetings are always full of lots to do, but they're not contentious like some other departments that I've been exposed to. And the faculty are respectful and mutually supportive of one another. It's been delightful to work with the faculty here.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned some special projects that you've been involved in. Are there some others that you'd like to mention?
Well, working in my capacity with as the an alumni SLIS Alumni Association liaison, I picked up where Bunny Gibson left off in terms of doing class notes for the Jottings and Digression mm-hmm. newsletter, mm-hmm. and that's always it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun hearing from people from all over the world and reconnecting with people that I've seen or worked with or advised while they were in school or met at professional meetings after they graduated. I did form a committee that initiated the endowment development project. We Charles helped us sell some of the silver spoons from the class of 1912. And the money from that went to the UW Foundation to start the development fund, which Louise, during the last couple of years, has done a magnificent job of enhancing and reaching out and really adding tremendous resources for the school's future. Etheline Whitmire came to me a few years ago. It must have been 5 years ago now. And she had seen an article from the Division of Information Technology Academy that was looking for people to mentor students that were going to be in the academy. She said, we've got to get SLIS involved in the Do It ITA in some way. Mm-hmm. So I contacted the coordinator, and we were able to establish a summer camp experience at college library with the teaching librarians doing an introductory information literacy training for them. And I became a mentor of a young Hmong student from East High School whose name is Mi Her. She and two of her other East High classmates were ITA students throughout their East High career. And I worked with another advisor from Do It, who actually helped to get the program, the academy, started. And we sort of advised them in a group fashion. The five of us would have lunch together. And all three of these young Hmong students had graduated from East High School and were accepted at the UW-Madison and started here this fall.
Fantastic.
And they're going to go in different career paths, one in social work, one in teaching, and one in medicine. But they all have these wonderful information technology skills and a familiarity, at least in their subconscious, mm-hmm. with the field of librarianship. Hopefully it will spark an interest in the future. And so that was a great project, and I think it was very good at developing awareness of the field and connecting us with the Division of Information Technology. Mm-hmm. I did put together a publication a couple of years ago, which is totally out of date now because of the internet, but called The Job of Finding a Job, mm-hmm. which I'm thinking that I should put together a book on effective resumes for the library and information science field, because I haven't found one that does a really good job for our particular area. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite projects, I was covering the phone late one afternoon and happened to pick up a call that was from the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo. The business manager there was looking for a faculty member who might be interested in consulting with them to establish a library in honor of Ron Sowie. And I knew that I had to ask for permission to be able to be involved because I wasn't sure how elaborate or involved the project might be. But I said, I know somebody who would love to work with you on that project. And then as soon as I got off the phone, went and asked Jane Robbins if I could do it. And she said, by all means, if it gets to be too much, you'll have to take vacation time. But and so I was involved from the very beginning in persuading George Archibald that a library was more than a room with books in it, that what the International Crane Foundation needed was a technical research and information center that could provide reference assistance to people working with cranes and habitat restoration and wetlands preservation all over the world. And I got to work with the architect in actually planning the design of the library and in writing the job description and helping them to find places to advertise the job, and then in participating in the search and screen committee for hiring each of the people that have been hired as librarians there.
Mm-hmm.
So that was probably one of my most favorite special projects.
Right. Now you talked about being involved with Do It on the IT project for the younger students.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about being involved campus-wide in the diversity effort.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other campus-wide
mm-hmm.
activities that you've been involved in?
I trained to be a trainer in interpersonal communication skills and gave assisted with various campus units that needed better interpersonal communication training. And I did that for a number of years. I've also been involved with, I was a member of the Academic Staff Professional Development and Recognition Committee, the PDRC, which is a wonderful experience because you get to read the applications from absolutely fantastic academic staff leaders from all across the campus. And decide on who the award winners will be and then participate in the reception honoring them at the Chancellor's House. And I, because of the work with the PDRC, the academic staff mentoring is a subcommittee of the PDRC, and I was familiar with the development of the academic staff mentoring program from the very beginning and have been actively engaged in that since its conception.
Well, would you talk about the climate for women then on the Madison campus?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it helps or hinders the advancement of women?
I think compared to when I was here in school in the 70s, the Flamingos group was forming to try to support women who wanted to move into academic administration positions. The climate for faculty, women faculty in the sciences, is still difficult. I think it's still, they don't have as strong a mentoring support network, and the sciences are so competitive and political. But throughout the time that I've been on campus, women have moved into all kinds of academic administrative positions. And we had a president of the UW system who was a woman, and the chancellor of the UW-Madison campus who was a woman. The graduate school dean was a woman. So I think there is much more opportunity than there had been in the 60s and early 70s. And women who are interested in being actively engaged in campus politics and campus initiatives have much more of an opportunity to do that than in the past.
There's a couple more questions about your professional life before we get into a little bit of your personal life and your life after work. One of them you've already talked about, and that is your involvement in professional organizations. But I wonder if you would talk about that a little more and specifically talk about if that involvement has helped you in your career, and if so, how?
Okay. One of the things that that Muriel Fuller instilled in us when we were in school is that the master's program was just a beginning for lifelong learning and continued professional development. And one strong recommendation was to become active in a professional organization. both at the community, state, and national level. And so I've been a member of the Wisconsin Library Association and a member of the Friends of the Madison Public Library Board throughout my professional career. The work with the Special Libraries Association helped my own subject specialization development and my leadership development for mentoring students outside of Wisconsin and the Madison area. My membership in the Wisconsin Library Association has helped me to stay in touch with current concerns of the field, to bring back to faculty meetings and curriculum requests, course development, not the actual content, but the issues and themes associated with the field, and to stay in touch with library employers and our alumni in terms of advising students in their course selection and their activities as in student organizations and student employment experiences.
And then would you talk about any honors or awards you've received throughout your career? Include, I know that you've been elected to offices mm-hmm. in these associations, so talk about those too.
Well, let's see, I was a newsletter editor for the Natural Resources Division of the Special Libraries Association. That wasn't elected, that was sort of anybody who would volunteer. I was president of the SLIS Alumni Association before I took the job in 85. I've been active in the Wisconsin Association of Academic Libraries and helped to establish the Special Library Division within WLA. I've served on the WLA Foundation Board and helped to establish the foundation. Mm-hmm. I served on the Special Libraries Association Student Academic Relations Committee and was chair of that committee for a 2-year period. And I've been on the Friends of the Madison Public Library Board as a director for most of my career. I figured it's good to maintain close connections with Madison Public and to understand what's going on from the inside out in terms of advising students for potential projects and for volunteer opportunities. Mm-hmm. Right now I am the chair of the WLA Foundation Scholarship Committee. And I'm, because of all the centennial activities, I stepped down from being chair of the UW-Madison Academic Staff Mentoring Committee, although I am still on that committee. I serve on the College of Letters and Science Dean Academic Staff Issues Committee and attend meetings with the dean to talk about things that relate to academic staff, professional development, and campus climate. And then I have all sorts of responsibilities within the school for the graduation ceremony and the new student orientation program. Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll end this interview and by asking you if you would talk about your life after work. Okay. Describe your family. How do you balance work and family? What do you do for fun and relaxation when you're not working? How do you stay healthy and stress-free?
My husband and I decided not to have children, but we do have 2 cats. One that he rescued and one that I rescued. I rescued mine from the backyard and he rescued his from the pound up in Waupun. And so they take up quite a lot of time and energy when you're home. We met at the Sailing Club at Marquette. When we got married, we changed from soft water sailing to ice boating. We campaigned our two different styles of ice boats with the Four Lakes Ice Yacht Club for 10 years, from 78 to 88. In 87, when my husband turned 50, he got a pilot's license. And we bought into a Cessna 172 general aviation aircraft. So outside of work, aviation has been a, general aviation is a major interest, along with the cats.
Do you fly?
I co-pilot.
Oh.
I listen on the radio and follow along on the charts and have the other charts that we'll be using lined up, so like help to navigate. But I'm not quick enough on the radio navigation or the compass degrees to be able to get my license. I'd need to really, 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 really work at it. I've said I'd need a wife for 6 months.
Yeah, and you've got your own private pilot, so what do you mean?
Right, that's right. So that opens up a whole wonderful world of independent traveling. And the last 6 years we were working with Steve's uncle, who was the chief pilot of a World War II aircraft that would go to air shows in the Midwest. And any time that they were going to be in a show within 400 miles of Madison, we would go and volunteer and work the air show. Mm-hmm. Well, the plane got sold and shipped to Korea. So this summer we didn't have any air shows to go to. It was a very different summer for us. Mm-hmm. But that adds a whole different community and dimension to our lives. Yeah. That is great fun.
Now talk about this, if you wouldn't mind, this ice boating. Isn't mm-hmm. that dangerous? It looks extremely dangerous to me.
It can be, but so can downhill skiing. Mm-hmm. It's about the same speed. Mm-hmm. If you're racing in an ice boat race, there are rules of right-of-way, just as there are in soft water sailing. Mm. And when you have a race course, the race committee has scouted the ice to make sure that there aren't any holes.
Good.
So if you're actually sticking to the race course, you're probably more on a good clear ice sheet. Mm-hmm. And with lots and lots of people to help if you tip over or run into something.
So where do you race here? Do you race on Lake Mendota?
You race wherever there's ice.
Of course.
And the last couple of years, there hasn't been very much ice.
Ah.
So we've been using our airplane much more than we've used our ice boat. In fact, I don't think I got mine out of the garage at all last year.
So you have your own boat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my.
My husband had a Skeeter, which was a bigger boat. And the last race of the season, about 6 years ago, there was something sticking out of the ice that broke his ice boat plank, his runner plank. And after that, the ice boat builders were experimenting with carbon fiber and with moving the cockpit from behind the mast to the front of the mast, but not doing it in any necessarily systematic way, so that you couldn't tell whether building the cockpit in front of the mast was really that much faster for racing, or whether that was just a fluke of that particular race.
I see.
And so he's been busy with the airplane, and the Skeeter ice boats are much, 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 much more expensive to build because of the carbon fiber technology that they're incorporating into the boats and the masts. So we bought out our partners in the airplane, and we own it ourselves and have a hangar up at Prairie du Sac Airport.
I see.
So that is the bulk of our attention for extramural activities, other than my family is scattered all over the country and Steve's family is scattered, and We've got lots of friends and relatives to visit all over the United States.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, I don't have any more questions, but I don't want to end this interview without asking you if there's something we've missed that you want to make sure to get on tape.
When you said how do I maintain a balance between work and I try to not promise to do anything on Sunday, except Steve and I will usually go for an airplane ride on Sunday or do something working around the hangar. When I was growing up, my father was always working on the weekends because he was always on call. So I wanted to marry somebody who wasn't going to have to work on Saturdays and Sundays. And so I do try to reserve. Saturdays is usually taken up with water aerobics and chores at home. Mm-hmm. But then Sunday is the day that we tend to have to ourselves for rest and recuperation.
Sounds like a great idea. Anything else before we...
Well, let's see. Oh, I think you and I share diet interests in terms of...
Oh, I know.
...counting carbohydrates.
Yeah.
Trying to incorporate olive oil and salads.
Yeah.
That was something that I got into, and I feel much healthier when I follow that, an Atkins-like diet.
Uh-huh.
And then water aerobics and walking. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that I use to keep healthy.
Very good. Well,
I'm basically not a stressful person. And some of the interpersonal communication skills training did help me to recognize that it's not me, so that I can set things aside and focus on problem solving rather than stressing. So,
very good. Good. That's good advice to everybody. Well, thank you very much for agreeing to the interview. It was excellent.
Well, it's great that this is our centennial week. We're going to have a big party at the end of the week to celebrate the school centennial. And we're expecting over 125 people. We're going to have some, it's going to be wonderful to see all these old friends.
True.
And reconnect with classmates and alumni from all over the world, really. Friday is the reception at the Pyle Center, and Saturday Charles Bunge will be the keynote speaker, and then we're running some round robin discussions in the afternoon, and I'm going to be working with Etheline Whitmire, Darlene St. Clair, who is a Native American alumnus who works at St. Cloud State University, Janice Rice, who works here in College Library, and Nola Walker. And we're going to talk about reaching out to diverse populations and recruiting and services to various communities.
Very good. It looks like a wonderful program. I'm going to be there in the morning with my tape recorder.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Right. Well, thank you again.
Thank you.